Greetings and welcome to Mount Olympus. I am Hercules Invictus, and today I'm proud to bring you Satori Speaks with Frater Serpentis Satori. Greetings and welcome, Satori. How are you?
All right.
I'm glad to hear that. And you had two very interesting topics you wanted to discuss. Have you settled on one of them, or should we discuss
both? Let's go with Gnosticism.
Okay. Sounds great to me.
Will allow us to continue making our gumbo. So.
Okay. In Greek, gnosis is often translated as a knowledge, a direct knowledge. It actually means recognition. So I figured I'd add that before you started explaining Gnosticism.
The problem is Gnosticism was sort of the ferment in the entire Mediterranean for a couple centuries. So it got into everything. Everything that weren't the established mysteries seemed to have some sort of Gnostic teaching. Everything from Set to Hercules to eventually it's one of the things mixed in to early Christianity. And it does seem to really be one of those things that's not really a system, at least not in the original texts. Is that your understanding?
Hello, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Okay. That Gnosticism eventually evolved into a system or a series of systems, but initially it was an individual exploration into what this is all about and how it all ties together and whether the entities who are either our creators or bosses, I guess you can call them, are good or bad in their intent. And I haven't really studied Gnosticism as a scholarly pursuit for very many years. So I'm just speaking generally, but I see it very much like a color wheel or a palette of different opinions about the same type of thing.
About those entities?
Yeah, about those entities. And again, the translations are very loose, like Archon and Aeon. Archon means leader, simply, just like Lord means Lord, and Elohim means Lord, Lords, and Balaam means Lords. You know, so basically they're the planetary rulers. If you count it, it's usually 7 or 14. And
That's the origin of the system, and we'll get into that next time when we talk about Merkaba.
Okay,
because I have to draw a line. I have to draw a line between to keep the history and the scholarship correct. I have to draw a somewhat arbitrary line between the two. So we're going to talk about Gnosticism first because Gnosticism is more familiar to people.
And aeons were originally spans of time, and it is still called aeonis, like an aeona in modern Greek is a century. So it's a measurement of time, but in the Gnostic writings, aeons and archons seem to be used interchangeably or with like slight variations in definition. So there's that.
It does seem sort of interchangeable, but that's also the fact that, as we were talking about in the previous episode about the iterant magicians, if every single iterant magician taught their own students their own flavor of Gnosticism, that easily results in 10,000 flavors of Gnosticism before the birth of Caesar.
And that's still happening today with certain religious explorations, or now everything seems to be called a cult. So you can call them cults by the new definition.
I don't like that word. I think that word is always a bad word. And when someone calls you that, they're accusing you of bad things. We need to get away from that word. Like we need to get away from all the other, this is the danger of labeling in magic,
right?
The danger of labeling. Well, I've never called what I do a cult. It's always Hecate's book club. And when I did Magic in college, we were a channeling group because we were working with a channeler and I would summon whomever, because we were a working group, because wizards do working groups. We're not covens or cults. And in my experience, both of those are very specific. A coven is a very specific group of witches that follows a very specific set of guidelines. And in my experience, cult is always bad, which is why pagans have been trying to get away from that word for 200 years.
But it didn't start that. It was a Roman term to describe.
It didn't start that, but it's like demon. It
right.
means what it means what it means on television. And because we live in a world where people get their definitions from supernatural, we have to accept that that's what that word means in these times.
Well, there
which
is
why, which is why there's so much argument in the world of magic about labels. Because cult is meant to be brainwashed people.
Now, yeah.
The way it is being used on CNN right now.
It's like the words noble and gentle meant something horrific, and now they mean something good. The words daemon, which is essentially just an in-between spirit, and includes angels, that means something bad now.
Right, and we have to accept that we live in a world where that's what that means if you say that in a bar. You don't have time to give someone a 10-page explanation of mysterious and culties, because those words mean what they mean in modern English. Like,
well,
which meant what it meant in Tudor England.
Well,
those words have their current meaning, and we're stuck with it.
The words mystery meant something very different in antiquity than they mean in common parlance now.
Which is why we have to be careful about trying to go too far with people who are on the outside. The people who are on the outside don't want to understand and are going to twist those words against us. Because that's the whole problem with the people who are trying to reclaim both of those words, is they can't be reclaimed. They're ingrained in our society since the Tudor times. We can't change the meaning of what, when people think about cult, they think about Johannesburg. They don't think about Aphrodite. That's not what that word means anymore. And we live in a world where that's what that word means. When someone accuses you of running a cult, they're not trying to help you. They're about to call the FBI. And the FBI has a very rigid definition of what that word means. And that's the definition we're stuck with right now, is the FBI's definition. So even though we may go, that's not what that word is supposed to mean, that's not what that word would have meant 3,000 years ago. Supernatural uses it to mean one thing, and most people are using the definition from supernatural. We're stuck with it. So we have to find other linguistic ways of getting around where the landmines are. But back to our topic about archons and aeons, and that they are... That's the result of the many different teachers doing that their own way.
Well, this is why I prefer to use theosophical definitions, because theosophy gave us a vocabulary for what is now called the New Age or spiritual, as opposed to metaphysical or cultic beliefs. So theosophy is good language, even if you don't ascribe to the theosophical way of looking at the world and what's beyond it. The vocabulary is very commonly known. It's been assumed by the New Age. So that's why I've placed a lot of importance on learning the language of theosophy in a lot of the things I do.
No, it's good to have a common terms for all of those things.
Because it facilitates communication. And in terms of the things I do, that's a very major aspect. It's talking to people and listening to people about certain things that they might not normally discuss. And to avoid the type of, conflict or headbutting that happens when a system is compared to another system, I just focus on changing the vocabulary to something both people can accept. And this way, when we're talking, we're less prone to shut out what another person's saying.
See, as someone who lived in New Orleans developed that vocabulary at some point almost two centuries ago, which is what all the neutral words are for, like practitioner and group, because you don't know what that group practices unless you ask. And cosmology. Yeah, but in New Orleans, that's how we got around that, is because Marie Laveau or one of her predecessors realized this was a problem, because you had all of the French groups and all the English groups and all of the voodoo groups, and they were all living on top of each other. And so they were just groups of practitioners with different cosmologies. Because once you understand everybody's vocabulary lists, you can understand, oh, in my practice, we say this. Or like
right.
The word mojo. The word mojo is common English now because Jim Morrison used it, and then it was used in those comedy movies. So mojo is a nice neutral word that covers everything that is practice. If you need a gree bag, that's mojo. If you do Enochian magic, you just have Enochian mojo. That's what that word means. And because that word is common English now, using that word to mean all that stuff, and because in New Orleans that is a much broader definition of all of that stuff than is commonly accepted in the rest of the country, because it's practitioners making mojo. Which is an interesting thing about New Orleans. For all this talk of manifestation the kids do, in New Orleans you literally make your groceries. In New Orleans you literally say, I have to go make groceries.
That's an interesting
But that's also
words.
In the same way that magic is so insidious in New Orleans, there are two kinds of cookbooks. One that comes from Marie Laveau's and one that was written by Emeril. They're both cookbooks. If you know what you're doing, you understand they're both cookbooks. But that's a different way of getting around that problem, by just using neutral language. Because then you have to ask. And then you don't assume because you're using neutral language.
That makes a lot of sense, and I will look into the vocabulary developed in New Orleans to see how I can modify the vocabulary that I've been using and slowly developing.
Well, New Orleans has two centuries on you, because what we call hoodoo probably happened before the Civil War. So sometime during Napoleon's life is probably when hoodoo became hoodoo. So they've had a lot of time to have this argument.
So,
but back to our real topic.
Why should the wheel be reinvented? Just adapt what other people have successfully used and use it to communicate to a wider range of people.
Right, which is the problem with accusing everybody of witchcraft. Because when you assume all practitioners are witches, you're accusing everyone of witchcraft.
Which can mean any one of a number of things in the here and now.
Right. And it's a reclaimed word anyway. which is a different problem with that word. The people who were burned at the stake would not have identified themselves as witches. That word was reclaimed by Wicca.
Well, I know
the people burned at Salem would not have self-identified as witches.
The people who in Greece of my childhood practiced what would be called magic or witchcraft, they didn't consider themselves either magicians or witches. They considered themselves healers. So they'd get called in, they'd do magical operations, they get effects like exploding clothes and things like that. It was very dramatic.
Wise women. Yeah, normally in ethnic circles, they're called wise women in whatever language that is. Be it in Mexican, be it in Ukrainian, be it in Irish, that's usually what you're really saying in that language.
I remember as a child, I got very sick, so I went to a conventional doctor. Back then, they used to travel from town to town because there weren't that many doctors in very many towns. And you had to stay in line with animals, too. They also took care of animals. I was diagnosed as having had an evil eye hex put on me. And so the conventional doctor, who's also a veterinarian, referred me to a wise person who anointed my neck with olive oil and did the exploding cloves thing and whispers, then out loud exclamations. When I got back to the United States, I was diagnosed with walking pneumonia, but in Greece, it was the evil eye.
Yeah, well, that's the thing about what they know that science doesn't.
Well, they would say that. They
Which
would
is
say
back.
That. Would I say that Americans didn't believe in the evil eye, they would say that Americans are stupid or spiritually blind or both.
Right. And that's always the problem in this country, which is why we have to be careful with that the blind use those words to mean what they use those words to mean, so we can't use those words at all. In New Orleans, you don't use those words at all, and only someone who self-describes themselves as a witch is a witch. You don't assume someone practices witchcraft. Especially considering the lines between witchcraft and witch doctor are nebulous.
Well, it's the same thing, because they're called, like if it was a male practitioner, he was called a yatros, which means a doctor.
Well, it's not a gender-based thing. It's based more on cultural norms, because normally a doctor means a more Caribbean or African flavored practice. Whereas a witch is a more European style practice.
Well, it is important to have a shared vocabulary and for words that are now loaded in a different way and dangerous to use, have words that are not loaded and not dangerous to use, that it's still
like we don't need to use demon post New Age. After Opening the Channel came out and talked about spirits, you can just say spirit and spirit guide. There's no reason to use the bad word. Because common English just says spirit guides. New Age people just say spirit guides. And that's fine, because that's what they're saying in Japanese and African anyway. Loa just means invisible stuff. All that invisible stuff. And the same thing for kami. Kami means the same thing. It means the people in this room that don't have bodies. There's no need to use bad words. when common English already uses those words, and they've been mostly accepted for almost 40 years now. And between TV and YouTube, that's what those words mean now.
Accuracy is sacrificed if you do that, though.
Accuracy is sacrificed, but you don't live in Greece. And if you're trying to talk to people who speak different languages, you mean the invisible people.
Right.
You mean my invisible friends.
I'll often say invisible people, the invisibles.
Because that's better in English than the word that has come to mean the villains in Supernatural. Because that word, post-Crowley, has a very specific meaning. And it's the meaning it's used in Supernatural. Because people that even know what that word means are referencing either Supernatural or Heredity. They're not referencing ancient Greek texts. They're not referencing the way Socrates uses that word. Most modern Americans have never read Socrates.
That's very true.
So the problem with referencing a book no one has read is no one's read that book. But almost everybody has seen at least a little bit of Supernatural. And they just assume what is in Supernatural is true. So we're stuck with that now. And most of Supernatural is pretty much true, so we're stuck with that too. And see, this is the whole issue with Gnosticism, is it goes through, it's around for a couple of centuries. Mostly today we think of it as a Christian thing, but that's also because the Christians burned a whole lot of books, so we don't really... It's disingenuous to say it was a Christian movement because they burned a bunch of books. So we don't really know because they don't want us to.
But they did dip into the Abrahamic mythologies in trying to make their stuff more acceptable to people who weren't of the original belief systems that they embraced and spoke from. Later on with Gnosticism, if I recall correctly, there was a lot of accommodation made to the general public's understanding and definitions at the time.
And that's where you get the Dead Sea Scrolls from. The Dead Sea Scrolls are this weird ultra-Orthodox Judaism mixing with Zoroastrianism and Gnosticism and making something very different.
Well, the New Age beliefs have been criticized for those reasons also. It's like an amalgam of a bunch of different things seemingly smacked together.
Well, because it is, because a lot of it is third-hand Crowley and Fortune and Barden mixed and matched with crystals and fairies and... light working and beings of light. That's why New Age is a movement. New Age isn't a set of beliefs.
Right. It makes use of sets of beliefs. And like with the Gnosticism of old, they can be seemingly quite different. They're like different configurations of the same beliefs expressed in different ways.
Right.
But unless you know the original material or you're familiar with the original material, it really won't make sense with just the general words that the public uses. there's enough terminology in there to lead you to the direction of where these thoughts originated from or what inspired them.
Well, that's the difference between the people on the inside and the people on the outside. That's what being an initiate is. You're on the inside. You're on the inside looking out, not the outside looking in. But when you're talking on the record and in public, you are stuck with the words the public understands. Initiates have very different conversations because we understand the mechanics of the universe and understand the jobs of those invisible people. So most magic conversations at my level are highly technical. When higher level magicians argue about things, what looks like a weird, like even, I've had long digressions about how to spell things in Hebrew or Enochian, because we want to make sure the spelling and enunciation is correct in the spell. We don't want a spelling error creeping in.
But if you can't use the mythology and the concepts that you're basing your system on, how do you communicate that?
You don't communicate. It depends on what you're really talking about. If I'm talking about someone from another system, like my Indian boss, because he's a polytheist too, it's not apples and oranges. It's when I was wearing that lightning bolt necklace and he asked me about it, I'm like, you say Indra, I say Zeus. I'm doing a thing. I'm doing a thing with Zeus. And other people, mysteries are mysteries. It's just magic. It's mojo. I don't want to explain it because you wouldn't understand anyway. If you really want to understand, you can be taught. You could be taught. If you don't understand, you don't understand because you're on the outside. And that's why there's all of the gates and barbed wire and all the stuff keeping you on the outside. If you want to take the other pill and understand what's real, you're welcome to. But in my business, there's a limit to what I will explain to someone who is on the outside. But again, that comes from New Orleans rules about, like, all of the hoodoo stuff, you can buy at the Botanica. None of that is secret because you can buy that at the Botanica. A lot of stuff now, even in magic and witchcraft, you can look up on YouTube. So none of that is secret anymore. But when you get into mythology and stuff like that, there's a limit to what I will explain. My roommates realized I'm in the middle of a long process working. So because I'm using the Om, I have to explain that as it's like runes, but runes are things. The Om are trees. In runes, you have a dice bag, a cow, and a horse. You have stuff. Runes are stuff. In the Om, you have apple trees, blackthorn trees, oak trees. It's similar, but only to an extent. And so you have to explain things that way. They don't need to know any more than that. They just need to understand that it's like runes, but it's in Irish. And it's not stuff, it's trees. But when you're dealing with other people that practice, we all do the same things, which is what all the neutral New Orleans words are for. If you do deific magic, you're doing high magic, period. Be it for Jesus Christ or Alegua or Hecate, high magic is high magic. What package you take God in is up to you. That's fine. And low magic is herbs and oils and stones and all that stuff. Whether you self-describe yourself as a witch is a completely different matter than doing low magic. Where your balance is between high and low is personal. It depends
right.
on your practice.
That's like in Greek,
and it changes.
It's usually translated as like low, some form of low magic, but it actually means miracle working. So the practitioners of thaumaturgia do not consider it a low form of magic. You're actually affecting creation through your art.
Because you are. You're just not doing it. You're just doing it with herbs and oils and things like that.
Right.
Which is why people that are good at low magic don't really feel the need to use high magic unless we really feel the need. Because if you can do it with a little bit of low magic and brew a potion and let the potion do the work, that's much easier than talking to Hecate about how to do it that way. So. That's the thing about doing it that way, and that's also the thing about living in another time where everything is mixed together. And again, in a period when there is so much Gnosticism, either through people playing with things, because everything is available now.
Mm-hmm.
And you can learn a lot just from YouTube. So you can learn a lot with YouTube and just do it.
And if this is the case now where you can go on YouTube and get this information, why the need for secrecy and why the need for oaths if this is now part of the common knowledge that one can get by...
Because it's not all common knowledge. And because most of the stuff on YouTube... Okay, in Dungeons & Dragons, there are about 20 levels for a class in 5th edition. The problem with what's on YouTube is most of that stuff is third level or below. In fact, The Witch of Wonderlust actually did a very specific episode about why she has no mid-level content. If you choose to remain a third level practitioner, you never have to take any oaths, but you probably never have a teacher. You get to stay in the sandbox playing with the things in the sandbox. If you want to become God, you have to learn from someone who's done that. And they had to take oaths. Like the guy before them, like the guy before them, like the guy before them. Because as you are playing more and more and more with the dangerous parts of the unconscious, there are more and more dangers to yourself and others and the entire universe. From just you. From you. As you learn those things. Which is why there's so much anger about Crowley breaking his oaths. Because Crowley messed up a bunch of stuff by publishing those books. Because Crowley tells you how to do almost everything. He doesn't explain the highest levels, but he defines them to dispel the myth of secret masters. There are no secret masters if people can attain those levels. But people who attain those levels have to take oaths, or you haven't really attained the level. And that's the trade-off of with great power comes great responsibility. If you want to have a tiny bit of power, you never have to take any oaths. You can do what you want. But certain forces with both power itself and the invisible people aren't going to allow you to learn certain things or have them if you are not bound by fraternal oaths one way or another. you have to make responsible use of power, or you just aren't allowed the higher levels of power. And there are always trade-offs, but that's the trade-off of taking the path rather than being a dabbler. In the same way, you wouldn't trust a guy on the bus to do brain surgery on you. You need a guy who went to school to do brain surgery. It's the same thing with higher levels of magic. Anyone can pat your knee, but I wouldn't trust a guy on the bus to do brain or heart surgery. And it amounts to the same thing in magic. In the same way that as you go up in martial arts, you take more and more oaths. Because once you have a black belt, you can kill someone pretty quickly. Any magician who can kill you pretty quickly has a whole lot of oaths to prevent them from doing that every 5 minutes. Did I answer your question?
Yes, and you give me a lot to think about. I'm of the belief, as you know, that life is the great initiator. And if you pay attention
but
to life...
But that is true. That is true. But the reason there have been oaths in the professional level of magic, at least since Horus, if magic as we know it began with Horus, oaths have been around almost forever, and that's fine as long as you aren't going to try to reach the highest levels. The people who are allowed to play in the sandbox are allowed to play in the sandbox because they're not playing with guns. Once you start doing something that's as deadly as a bus or a gun, you need to be responsible for your behavior.
Well, I believe you should be responsible for your behavior regardless. You know, that's part of...
But no one is responsible for their behavior unless they know they are responsible and what their responsibilities entail. The same reason you can't just walk into Target and buy a gun.
In Pennsylvania, you could have.
In Pennsylvania, you could have.
We lived in Pennsylvania for about a decade, and you could buy firearms and explosives for holidays in the Target or Kmart or Walmart.
But that's the common way of understanding that is the lower level people who are just playing with crystals and talking to fairies don't need oaths because they're not doing anything dangerous. If you wish to achieve the middle levels, no one's going to explain any of that to you if they don't have you under oath. So it happened to me, so it happens to everybody once you start clawing your way to the middle level. Because I had taught myself, with a little help from Michael, all of the lower level stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But when I was about to start one of the rituals in the middle, I got myself caught by the Brotherhood. And this is exactly what they told me about, like, yeah, you could do that by yourself. But then you're going to hit, then you're not going to know what to do when you finish the middle levels. And then when you get to the higher levels, you're not going to be under oaths, so you won't be able to get the right cooperation from the spirit world. Spirit world needs to know you both have those oaths and those passwords, or things won't connect properly.
That makes a lot of sense.
And that's also why you've seen me get very angry and people talk about secret or invisible masters. I'm like, there are plenty of masters in the world. They just won't talk to you. You didn't pass the 12-question test. What's the 12-question test? See, you didn't notice it when they did it. The test is the same in all of the secret brotherhoods. You failed somewhere halfway.
There are invisible masters, though.
There are invisible masters, but if you wish to achieve that with a body, you have to have someone else who has a body who's lived through it. That is what initiation is. If you wish to receive an initiation of 9 equals 2, you need to talk to someone who physically has a body who's achieved 9 equals 2. Because otherwise there's a fine line between magic and madness. But that's where the grade system comes from, and in a result later to deal with Gnosticism creates the grade system. The grade system is so even though you call things by different names, since you're a 10th level wizard and not a 5th level wizard, give me the password that lets me know you're a 10th level wizard. If you don't have the password, you're not a 10th level wizard. You might be able to do some stuff, but you don't have the knowledge that comes with the power you can sometimes use because you are not educated. Or if you are educated, you're banging your head down the stairs. So, and I'm not going to explain things to you because I don't have you under oath. I am not allowed to explain things to you because I don't have you under oath.
And that is perfectly okay. I respect everybody's system, and I trust in life enough to know that if I need the information, I'll be provided it.
Well, see, when we're talking here, I'm on the record, so I have to stick with things that are...
Right. No, understood.
That I can point to.
I can be said to be a magician in my way, but not in the conventional sense. And we've had this conversation off the air, so I'm not going to get into the conversation here because, again, I don't want to interfere with this effort to communicate between different people who are at loggerheads on spiritual or metaphysical levels. But I can see what you're saying, and I see the importance of it, and you're using very good examples to add weight to your points. Because of our conversations off the air and on the air and other conversations I've had off the air and on the air, what I'm doing is I'm making my own questionnaire we're going to be touching on...
The questionnaire is always the same. You can't reinvent the wheel. Questionnaire is always the same.
But these are questions that have been flowing through my head. But we started with a theurgist, for instance, like what are the mysteria, what are the spirits you're talking to, or communicating with? I haven't written them out yet, but I'm in the process of working that through. And then we're going to be doing a bunch of shows where each group of people tackles that question in their own way. And so we get a multiple answer based on different perspectives so that people can kind of see by touching the trunk and the tail and the knees that it's an elephant of some sort.
See, to me, it doesn't really matter. It's just labels anyway.
Right.
We can't really know God because God is the thing beyond things. All our symbols are there. The Tao that can't be named is not the eternal Tao that the little finger puppets we call gods are finger puppets. And that's what's so ridiculous about, can Thor beat up Chongo? Wait, how many people are in the room? Wait, now I'm confused. can that even happen?
my godson, when he was little, because he loved superheroes and mythology, and of course I'm the right person to have as a godfather if you're into those things. So I used to draw him pictures of the superheroes and the mythical heroes, and we used to say, what if Hercules fought the Hulk and blah, blah, blah. So he was excited when I went to see him one time and asked him what's up. And he goes, oh, I learned about Jesus Christ. I said, really? That's awesome. But what did you learn? And he looked very serious. He goes, he can beat up the Incredible Hulk. So in his mind, that's what he took from that. So, yeah, there are adult people who think that way, too.
That's the problem with religion. That's a problem in New Orleans, which is what all of those neutral words are for, is to prevent my God can beat up your God. the whole point is you don't really know.
Right.
The God is there as a facilitator for they're your mentor among the invisible people. They are mentoring you. The God isn't the infinite thing, but I agree with the Hindus about that the infinite thing is unknowable anyway. And the gods are just our mentors, and fighting with someone about all of that silly stuff is just a form of tribalism and the sickest form.
Well, I always begin my Hellenic or Grecian or, you know, whatever you want to call it, journey by telling people that in terms of Greek gods, in the mythology, it tells you what they are. Number one, they're beings of light. And that comes out in the myth with the Semele and the birth of Dionysus and so forth. Second, from the same story, that we can't grasp them with their minds. They're alien to us. And then they're shapeshifters. They can look like anything they want to. And there's numerous examples of that, including in the Odyssey with Mentor. And there's tons of examples.
And they really like humanity. In yeah. both ways, we can say that sentence. Because one of the things I used to joke with Helen of Troy about is that the Greek gods love mankind.
Yeah.
Both in the check out that hot girl over there way, and also in the so what's good on HBO this week way.
Right.
That they both love us in the very down-to-earth way, but they also love the good things that men do.
Right, and part of the Hercules lesson that you would learn on a lesson plan is that there is something important, so important that the gods partake of it in the experience of humanity.
Well, that's what demigods are for. That would have been our other topic, that the demigods are here to be their tour guides in this sector of the multiverse, which is why the gods ask such strange questions of their children that they would never ask of their clergy, because their children are like, no, Mom, you really aren't understanding what that song is about. That's not at all what Kurt Cobain is saying. He only called the song Lithium. That's not what it's about.
But unless somebody's read Riordan, and even Riordan doesn't quite get it right, but he gets it communicated.
He's writing for children, and it's fiction. He's hiding behind fiction.
So people reading
fiction
that...
Fiction writers are fiction writers.
Ideas, but again, it's not like that. It's not exactly the way it's conveyed. And if you accept it exactly as it's conveyed, it's very misleading and wrong.
Well, that's a problem with everything that is fiction in Hollywood.
Mm-hmm.
If real wizards could do what people can do in Harry Potter, this world would be a very different place. But because magic here is more subtle, but that's the whole problem with belief being filtered through Hollywood rather than experience. And gnosis.
And the way, like communication, like I'll just share one. I have all these systems, the ways of communicating with the universe, as I'm sure you do, you know, as well. But you're part of one of my ways, because a lot of information flows through your consciousness and your unconsciousness throughout the course of the day. So it's sometimes difficult to ascertain whether the information is coming from one place or another place. So for those who are related to the gods, let's say, you know, have a different type of relationship other than magician or priest with the gods, information starts coming to you through reliable sources who will talk about it. It's very rare, and you're one of the exceptions. Somebody will say, this came for you from Zeus, let's say. Most people would just say something that was what was said to me by Zeus that I just shelved for a little while for one reason or another. And then it'll keep being said.
Like me pointing out to you that the old 80s He-Man is now available in a super box, and obviously there's something in there you need.
And I got it from the library, and I got the other one from the library too. So I'll have those next week, and I will see what exactly I need to.
Oh, that new version of the Magic Flute is gorgeous and beautiful and fun.
Yeah.
That's so good. It's so good.
I'm going to have that next week or this week. But the library has it on the way, so it'll be on the way.
We're allowed to say it's the Magic Flute because it's at Target.
Okay. There you go.
So it's not a secret. You can buy it at Target.
It wasn't in the two Targets I looked at, but that's what libraries are for, until I locate in some other way.
I was able to find mine, but I sort of knew where it was going to be. It just wasn't there till this previous week. But I didn't get to see it in the theater because it wasn't anywhere I could see it in the theater in Chicago. But it covers that material very well, and there's even a interesting thing in the middle about Freemasonry and the Magic Flute.
Very cool.
That's already baked into the cookies.
But it is, the universe talks continuously. And I know when I've directly asked questions and really needed an answer, they've come. And basically, I've had that happen through like the podcasts as well, like in our exploration of space beings and UFO beings. I am talking to the same beings through different people who don't really know each other or don't communicate with each other. So I know I'm getting the answer.
It was like that in New Orleans with me, because every once in a while people would try to be like, and a message from, like, I know AWAS is around. So a lot of that stuff with AWAS being around, a great many things that I know I need to do are just told to do. He just tells me I need to do it. With him hanging out, it simplifies the chain of command, because he just is like, when you are ready. Bob. Oh, nice to see you again, Awas. You're not around so much, my invisible friend. But he only shows up when things are important.
Right. I get the same thing with a lot of my invisible friends. That they're around, and if for whatever reason I'm distracted or not paying attention enough, they'll make sure to repeat it so often. Regardless how preoccupied I am or focused on something else, I will notice it after a few times. It's like, all right, I got it. I'm on top of it.
There was one movie about ghosts where the character says, I can't see you, but I know you're there. And that's how it is with me and my invisible friends. There's a reason we call it a presence candle. There's a reason why in English we call it a presence candle. That I, like with Hecate. Hecate isn't always around. Normally she's just watching through my webcam. If she's even watching my webcam. But when she makes herself present, I can feel it. I feel it in my whole body. The same way with any of my other invisible friends, that most of the time they're off stage. They don't need to be on stage. They can see perfectly well from wherever they are. But when they step on stage, I hear their theme music and see the lights change.
Right. I know exactly what you mean. With me, the theme music isn't literal, but it's their introduction is there.
Right. But that's what I mean.
And I'm going to be modifying some of the things I'm doing. Our conversation will continue as it's been continuing. I might have a new introduction, a new closing, but this is good the way it is, and a lot of information gets discussed, and there's a lot to meditate upon, and a lot of insights to be gained. So we're going to be continuing like we're continuing, I think I've mentioned to you there's going to be a panel with all the mages and sages and seers who wish to participate in the panel, and we're going to be covering different things, some of them situational or timely, but mostly it's going to be like some of the topics that we've touched upon today and at other times. So this way,
that I'm already on the record. I can just submit my testimony to Congress.
There you go. And we are living in interesting times.
Well, it's also the issue about the things I'm allowed and not allowed to say to people who aren't under oath.
Understood.
Because this is all on the record, you can just make sure your committee hears this, and this is my testimony for the committee. Because if they try to pull things out of me and I have to say, I can't tell you that, that's it. On the record.
I'm not under oath to anybody who's here. But we operate from multidimensional structures. And there are some
but
things
you're still under, you're still under oath, which is why I can tell you things. But there are other people who I am uncertain of that situation with, who I consider to be playing in the sandbox.
Yeah, I know.
You don't ask Oppenheimer. If you're playing in the sandbox, you don't ask Oppenheimer what he did at work today.
Right. Understood.
Right.
Because I know when I start wandering into a topic that I shouldn't, and then it's shown to me why it's not a good idea to share that information with this person or generally with the world.
And see, that's why I have to abstain from your committees, because there are too many people who are not under oath. That if I understood, I mean, that's why we had to create a specific oath in New Orleans, that even though all of us came from different secret societies, we had to create a specific oath for each other so we all knew what our responsibilities to each other were. And that was a blood and sword oath. So we all knew we were on the same page. And we all knew what responsibility we were taking upon. So we all knew what responsibilities we were taking upon ourselves for the tasks that were about to happen. So we all knew we could trust each other with everything we promised each other.
You made your point. I can see I can see what you were saying in all the conversations that are related to this. So we've run out of time. Thank you, Satori. You're awesome. And I look forward to our next conversation, which will probably be off air.
Okay, I will talk to you in a bit. I need to run a couple errands, but I will drop you a line in a minute.
Okay, be well, my friend, and thanks to all who are tuning in. Happy holiday season, whatever holidays you happen to celebrate. And until next time, joyous journeys and amazing adventures. Good night, everybody. And thanks again, Satori.